Chapter 3, Hidden Trouble. "Dodd, Dodd," whispered Buller. He had hopped from the creek and was nudging Dodd's arm. "What?" asked Dodd, startling to full consciousness. His heart pounded with adrenaline. He had only just barely closed his eyes, hoping to rest. "Shh," said Buller, putting a finger to his lips. He pointed at a thicket of bushes about 50 feet off. Something was coming. A small herd of deer bolted from the undergrowth and bounced away as suddenly as they had appeared. They were led by a large doe and trailed by a well-antlered buck. Bowler's concerned lips melted into a sheepish grin. "Oops," he confessed, shrugging his shoulders. "It wasn't what I thought." He eagerly returned to his soaking. Dodd blinked and took a deep breath. The shock of being startled had chased his sleepiness away, even though his body was still horribly tired. He continued to lay on the ground while gazing up at the patches of blue sky that splotched the otherwise multi-green canopy. The sky reminded him of outings with Pap, which were easily his best memories. However, such thoughts were abruptly dispersed by Buller's voice. "I heard that you're aided by a swapper," he said. "Is that who you were talking to?" "Huh?" mumbled Dodd, tilting his head toward Buller. With one ear to the ground, he could still hear the thumping of the fleeing deer. "You know, on the way over," prodded Buller. When Dodd didn't say anything, Buller assumed yes. "I've always wondered about them," he continued, flipping a bug off his smooth cheek. "Does your swapper connect you to the experiences of others, or is he the only one that's connected? How does it work, anyway?" Dodd hesitated. The subject of swappers drew an empty cabinet in his brain, or so he felt. But his silence didn't stop Buller from plowing on. "Swappers only mentor people who are positioned to do a lot of good. You sure are lucky." "Right," mumbled Dodd sarcastically. He didn't feel like luck was on his side, especially after the scathing lecture he had just received from Tritacello. "So tell me," said Buller, rambling on while digging more rocks out of the water, "does your swapper only get help from your family members when you're in a bind, or does he talk with them all the time? Or, I don't know. To be honest, Dodd, the whole system doesn't make very much sense to me. But I'm a Dryadon. We don't have any golden family chains or swappers among us. None of that whispering stuff." "Oh," sighed Dodd, distracted by two silver-striped beetles that were fighting over the same twig a few inches from his nose. When he realized that Buller was waiting for a response this time, he quickly added, "What makes you think I have a swapper thing?" "Dungo said so," replied Buller. "If it's not true, you can chew on one of his arms. He's got four to choose from. Besides, I watched you perform at the trials. Without help, you couldn't have competed so well. I mean, you are just a lad, and a human at that." Dodd meant to respond, yet not with the answer he gave. He burped loudly and had to resort to a sitting position in order to swallow the nasty medicine that attempted to creep back up his throat. Not only did it taste bad, it still hadn't done any good. "Perhaps half-human and half-bullfrog," joked Buller, surprised by the noise. It was louder than their voices and carried far enough to draw Tritacello's attention from high up in the tree. He looked down with his binoculars to assess the fuss. "What do you know about swappers?" asked Dodd, still swallowing. He preferred listening to Buller talk over answering questions. "Not much," said Buller modestly, scratching at his neck. His fur grew sparse toward the top of his chest and faded into a smooth, shaven look on his neck and cheeks. If only his head were showing, Buller's handsome haircut and charming face would easily sell him as a character worthy of Hollywood, the kind that women would swoon over. "You must know something," prodded Dodd, trying to hand one of the beetles a new twig. But neither would take it. They liked fighting. "I've never met anyone before you who was coached by a swapper," admitted Buller. "But I've heard a little. A friend of mine up north once told me that swappers are connected to golden chains, similar to staying in touch with the occurrences of the individuals in a large family, magically all at once." "Facebook," chuckled Dodd under his breath. Buller raised an eyebrow before continuing. "He also said that some swappers are able to draw on the skills of the group and then pass them along when they're needed. It all sounded pretty wacky schmacky to me. Is any of it true?" "I don't know about swappers," said Dodd honestly. He felt bad letting Buller down. "Oh, I see. You're new at it," conceded Buller, disappointed. "I've always wanted to hear more about them, ever since I read the tales of Daunus and Boloth. Victory at Rocky Ridge and Defeat of the Tregillans are two of my favorite books. Both of those guys were aided by swappers, and think of what they did." At the mention of Daunus and Boleth, Dodd cracked a smile, recalling their heroic stories, each ending in glorious victory. Though no sooner had he found the memories than he wondered where they had come from. The cabinet had been empty just moments before, completely void of anything about swappers. "I'm confused," admitted Dodd. He blearily glanced around before resting his eyes on Buller's face. "If I were being aided by a swapper, as you say, then wouldn't I know more about them, or at least recognize when I was being helped by one, like hear the voice of this mentor guy, or know something of his swapping or mentoring or whatever he does?" "Are you pulling my leg?" asked Buller, beginning to rise.
"Of course he is tricking you," grunted Dungo,
approaching quickly from behind Dodd, with Tretisello at his side.
"Look at him."
"I'm serious," said Dodd, feeling irritated at Dungo. Buller repeatedly brushed his hands down his legs and arms, forcing water out of his fur, while asking Tretisello what he'd seen. "Not much," was his curt reply. He walked straight to his overflowing pack, plucked it from the log as though it weighed nothing at all, and stowed his gear. "Do you want your sandwich now?" asked Tretisello. He held it in Dodd's direction. Seeing the food made the medicine in Dodd's stomach jump. The vial of cure-all wasn't sitting well. "No thanks," said Dodd, rising to his feet with Bowler's aid. Dungo lunged at Tretisello and begged shamelessly for it, reminding him that he had climbed the cliffs twice and therefore needed double the lunch. "It's Dodd," said Tretisello calmly, holding it back. He drew near Dodd and held it out. "Are you sure?" he asked, looking guilty. His face oozed regret for having reproached Dodd excessively, though he didn't attempt an apology for what he had said earlier, other than to defend the sandwich from Dungo. "All right, thank you," said Dodd, taking the triple-decked meat and cheese delight. It was 2 feet long and weighed nearly as much as a small child. Dodd's plan was to give it to Buller in return for Buller's continued service of carrying him. However, Buller declined, assuring Dodd that he was stuffed from his own lunch, along with the whole roasted goose he had eaten while back-floating away from the Magellan. He had taken the bird from Dardarius's table to reward himself for dutifully raiding both ships in search of the stolen triblot. Dodd glanced at Dungo, whose eyes were hungry and disappointed. His bulky beard was matted in some places, giving him the appearance of a homeless wanderer. Dungo didn't even ask for the food from Dodd, recognizing that he had been mean enough to not get it. His tail sagged pathetically as he sulked, turning to line up behind Tretisello. "Dungo," said Dodd, momentarily remembering his mother's repeated examples of kindness. "Here you go. You can eat it." Dodd held out the feast. The creature's face turned more human than it had been all morning as he gingerly approached Dodd to accept the food. His eyes revealed torment, like a real person was caged inside the grumpy beast that everyone else knew. "Thanks," he grunted tentatively, gulping the offering down. He took such big bites that Dodd had to look away, sensing the sight was more than his queasy constitution could take. Shortly thereafter, Buller swung Dodd onto his shoulders and they were off, heading southeast up a steep wooded hillside. Tretisello led in the front, as he had done in the bog, though now that the ground beneath their feet was dry, they rushed like horses bolting for water. It was all Dodd could do to hang on. More than once he lost his grip and was saved by the snake-like agility of Bowler's quick hands. The territory they dashed through was beautiful. The trees towered above the ground like giants with sturdy roots clinging to the sloping terrain, and the wind gently swayed the rooftop of leaves and needles 100 feet up, where the canopy of greenery almost completely blocked out the blue sky. Between the twig-littered ground and the bushy treetops, an outdoor auditorium gave flocks of birds room to fly freely, displaying their feathers for each other as they burst from one part of the forest to another. Their chirping chorus joined the running threesome's heavy breathing, like flutes and piccolos with the drums in an orchestra. After hours of toiling their way up the seemingly endless hillside, Tretisello slowed the team's pace to a comfortable trot, allowing them to catch their breath. Eventually, they came to a colossal tree whose trunk was more than 20 feet across and whose roots reached out another 100 in every direction, like giant serpents. Dodd shifted back and forth nervously on Bowler's shoulders as they climbed over and ducked under the web of wood. Something wasn't right. A cold feeling of fear and dread seized upon him. It was like knowing a horrendous thing was about to happen, but not able to recall what it was. The feeling grew until it burst Dodd's capacity to contain it. "Watch out!" he yelled frantically, looking over his shoulder in anticipation. "Buller, it's right behind us!" Dodd's sudden cry made Dungo trip and fall headlong into Tritacello, knocking them both down. Buller swung around recklessly, yet still managed to stand in a fighting position. He searched the ground and sky for threats, expecting something to come rumbling out of the roots they had just cleared. Nothing came. Even the chatty birds hid from view. "Where?" asked Buller anxiously, still searching. "What do you see?" As a few moments passed, his look faded from concern to confusion. Dungo began to berate Dodd.
"I just don't get it, kid. This whole mission is too intense to start playing games with us."
Just then, a large beast came crashing through the canopy, right where Buller had been looking. Its wings were massive, each about 15 feet across, with feathers that appeared to be made of black rubber, and from beak to tail, the bird spanned another 20 feet. It dove at Buller with its banana-sized talons out, followed immediately behind by a second of its kind. Everyone scattered in separate directions. Dodd hung on as Buller tried to make his way back to the safety of the mammoth tree's roots. Dungo stumbled again and scampered into a thicket of bushes. Tritacello slid behind a tooth-shaped rock a few paces from Buller and fumbled for his zip-rope whip and small dagger.
Whoosh! Zl! Crack!
Tritacello's whip licked the air and then struck as the intruders came within 40 feet of the ground. His weapon of choice was an interesting mechanism to watch. The handle resembled the hilt of a sword, from which metal line flashed out with razor-sharp blades, attached to three short cords at the end. In all, the whip could reach up to 30 feet, depending on how quickly Tritacello snapped it back. With the flick of his wrist, the wire shot out, and another flick made it recoil.
Whoosh, zool, crack!
The whip's blade snapped directly over Dodd and Buller 12 feet up. Wind from the massive winged beast swirled dust and leaves all around them, as the ferocious birds persisted in the air near the ground. Tritacello snapped his whip again. This time it cracked so close to Dodd that he dove off Bowler's shoulders in order to avoid being hit. "That was inches from my head," he stammered, looking up. The massive creatures glared at Dodd as they rose above the ground, retreating. One faltered with each flap, indicating Tritacello had struck it. "You're fortunate he's a great aim," said Buller, pointing proudly at Tritacello. "That flutter nearly took you home." The two menacing demons disappeared above the trees. "Those were flutters?" gasped Dodd, pulling himself to his feet. He leaned against a fallen tree for support. Buller's look of concern quickly reappeared. He bent down so his head was level with Dodd's and gazed deeply into his eyes. "I'm worried about you," he admitted. "It just doesn't make sense." "What doesn't make sense?" asked Dodd, repeatedly glancing skyward. He was distracted by thoughts of the birds coming back for him. "You don't make sense," said Buller. "You rode flutters at the trials and were incredible. Don't you remember?" Dodd didn't recall it, and he was quite certain he wouldn't forget a feat like that, but he didn't say anything to Buller. As soon as the flutters were gone, Dungo came grumbling out of the undergrowth, complaining. He barked about the prickly bushes, his aching feet, and Dredarius. Buller ignored Dungo and continued interrogating Dodd. "How did you know the flutters were coming?" he urged. A look of hope glimmered in his eyes, as if that piece of information would make up for the cavernous holes in Dodd's memory. "I don't know," confessed Dodd. "It just felt like we were under attack." Dodd looked down at the ground, trying hard to recall how he had sensed it, and finally came up with the only logical explanation. "I think I heard them coming and then guessed." "I didn't hear them coming," said Buller. "That was quite a guess. You must be psychic." "Psychic?" said Dodd. "I don't think so." "What color are my socks?" snapped Buller suddenly. "And don't look down at my feet. That would be cheating." "You don't have any," said Dodd, rolling his eyes. It seemed silly that Buller would even ask. "Wow, you're right again." "Buller," whined Dodd. "I could have been wearing socks," insisted Buller. "I've worn them before." Tritacello broke the standoff with his commanding voice. "We don't have time for this right now," he barked. "Flutters are usually sent as eyes and ears only, so they retreated. But they'll be back with riders that fight to the death. We have to get out of here." Dungo glared at Dodd and Buller as if it were all their fault and grunted irritably.
"Well, thank you. Now Dredarius knows exactly where we're headed. We're not following the coast nor toward Harbin, nor going the easy route east through the flatlands toward Canteen. So Dad only leaves south to Janus Pass and then on to Highgate."
"Hurry!" yelled Tritacello. He was mad that Buller hadn't fallen in line yet. "Carry the lad and let's make tracks. I don't like to side with anyone. But Dungo's right about Dredarious knowing where we're headed. It'll be disastrous if he beats us to the pass. Let's pick up our shoulders and run. Once we're over the top, there are plenty of places for us to hide. Without any further words, Tritacello turned and began bolting up the hill, even faster than before. Dungo hastily fell in line behind him, hunching as usual, and the two almost disappeared out of sight before Bowler had even secured Dodd on his shoulders. "I can't believe how fit he is," remarked Bowler, enviously watching Tritacello run. "At his age, most treaders are knocking on death's door. But look at him! It's not fair. He makes a 27-year-old Dryadon like me feel insecure. I'd be lucky to hit 150 years, let alone be racing up a hill at 238. Bowler made a few more comparisons before his panting took over. However, Dodd hardly heard what he said, since he was busy trying to hang on for dear life. Up the hill, the slope became so treacherous that it wasn't possible to climb without all fours. Roots and branches were used as though they were makeshift rungs in a giant, disorderly ladder, requiring from time to time some planning to scale. It slowed the pace enough to make conversation possible, which led Bowler into talking again. "Are you sure you don't remember riding Flutters?" he asked, still huffing from exercise. He waited for Dungo, who was losing speed in front of him. "Nope," said Dodd flatly. "That was my first time seeing them. Which reminds me, how would Flutters be eyes and ears for Dredarious? They can't talk, can they?" "Flutters? No," said Bowler. "Then who was riding them to report back to Dredarious?" "I didn't see anyone." Dodd wiped his face frantically, completely grossed out when Bowler pushed upward too quickly and sent Dodd's cheek colliding into the sweaty end of Dungo's tail. "Probably Holus," answered Bowler, chuckling when he realized what had happened. "They're small, fit right behind the head of a flutter to give commands, quite respected for their bravery in training them. At 30 inches, you'd think your human cousins would be scared." A loud creaking sound interrupted Bowler's reply. Dodd and Bowler both looked up, nervous that Dungo was breaking a limb with his massive weight, and shortly would be sitting on top of Dodd's head.
"Uh-oh," moaned Dungo, not sounding well.
He leaned heavily on a trunk-like branch, half-folding over it, with his arms momentarily dangling. A waft of noxiousness that easily beat all other nasty odors filled the air like the heavy, wet fog from a crop-dusting plane.
"Move back down, Bowler," gasped Dodd. "Give Dungo some room. I can't breathe."
"Squeak."
"Please," yelled Dodd. His voice choked with tears. He really couldn't breathe, and the smell made his eyes water like the vapors of a strong onion.
"I can't help it," complained Dungo. "Dat sandwich. Oh, I think I have gas."
"I don't think you have gas," puffed Bowler between chortles. "I know you have gas." He wasn't as bothered by the smell as Dodd was, and he clearly enjoyed the commotion it created. Therefore, his attempts to retreat were half-hearted, leaving Dodd's cowering head completely exposed to a series of direct hits. One toxic blast thundered out with such force that it nearly parted Dodd's hair down the center, and it wasn't completely dry. In desperation, Dodd finally resorted to shimmying down Bowler's back and onto a branch of his own, deciding that he was more likely to die from lack of oxygen, or possibly black lung, than from falling the hundreds of open feet that loomed below him. Dizzy and in pain, Dodd once more attempted to focus his mind on changing the surroundings. And when that failed, he tried magic, too. "Hocus pocus," he muttered desperately, along with the string of other spells that he remembered from a book series he'd read. Words that had done wonders for a certain scarred wizard boy, but none of them worked for him. No transporting, no alterations of the environment, no invisible shields, and no disarmaments. Dodd's only consolation was that Bowler, shortly after Dodd's exodus from his shoulders, became more sympathetic and ready to descend a distance when he too was victimized by a hair-parting gust, being foolishly caught without his Dodd hat for protection.
"He's got real problems," muttered Bowler, his eyes watering like a baby.
He paused at Dodd's level of the tree and wiped at his own leg with a clump of leaves, all the while glaring disapprovingly at the splatter he wore. "Why, oh, why did we follow behind him? I just bathed." When more sounds rumbled above them, like thunder before a torrential rain, Bowler's eyes widened, concluding he was still way too close to the source.
Without further warnings, he dropped his leaves, plucked Dodd up like a father hoisting his child from a burning building, and moved with purpose. He descended far enough to choose an alternate route before attempting to climb upward again.
"Sorry about that," said Bowler to Dodd as they passed Dungo a safe distance on his right. Bowler's voice was sincere. He knew that Dodd wasn't pleased with how slowly he had reacted, and after experiencing the full brunt of the foul wind for himself, complete with a smattering of debris, he recognized that Dodd's forgiveness would likely be slow coming.
"Flutters would make short work of this part, eh?" said Bowler awkwardly, trying to soften Dodd. "I bet they tracked us with their keen sense of hearing. Hunting instincts still linger in them, after all these centuries of domestication. We could ask Tritacello about that since he's been around so long."
"You're overrating the advantages of a long life," interrupted Dodd, frazzled and cross. His hair was crustified in some places. "My grandpa died when he was relatively young, and even at that, the last few years seemed to test his patience. Of course, he was still nice to us. We all miss him."
Bowler began to say something when Dodd snipped him off. "You may envy Tritacello, but at his age, it's all about everyone else."
Dodd thought about Pap when he spoke of Tritacello. Pap had spent his time serving others and hadn't seemed to care about what he got in return. "What would Pap think if he could see me now?" wondered Dodd. It made him feel a little bit guilty about getting riled up over Dungo's misfortunate circumstance. Nevertheless, he was immensely grateful he hadn't eaten the sandwich himself. Dodd glanced down and hoped Dungo would be okay.
"Tell me," insisted Bowler, leading back into his fixation on age. "How old was he when he died?"
69, said Dodd, searching above him for Tritacello. Their leader was out of sight, unaware of Dungo's condition.
169, responded Bowler. "That's really good for a human. Did he have any ancestors from those Maj living in Sush? I've heard some of them lived over 500 years. Course, that was before the hiccups he killed them all off. You humans sure have frail societies. Whether it's sickness or war, you just seem to be more prone to die."
"And Dryadons aren't," blurted Dodd, finding Bowler's assessment to be foolish, considering he was one of the last of his kind. Dodd glanced down again and was glad to see Dungo climbing, albeit sluggishly.
"What? What did you say?" asked Bowler. The wind had blown stridently for a few seconds, carrying Dodd's voice away. The higher they climbed, the harder the breeze blew.
Bowler didn't wait long before mumbling to himself a little song about a treader named Ponk. It was mostly unintelligible, except when he got to the chorus. "Oh, let the sun set here, or let the sun set there. I'm a treader through and through, so not a moment left to spare. I'll be hiking up a hill or even chasing down a bear, till the day I'm laid to rest without a care. Till the day they lay me down without a care."
Bowler's singing continued for quite some duration, getting louder each time he grunted the chorus, until it came to an end. It didn't sound like much of an end. Verses had been repeated a few times, making the song longer than its authentic form, and when he finally sang the last words, his voice shrilled like a young musician testing the range of a broken trombone. "I should like to be 263, announced Bowler heartily. He liked the way his statement rhymed. It would have been the beginning of another song if Dodd hadn't responded to it.
"Get over it. You're a Dryadon and he's a treader," said Dodd loudly, defying the howling wind. "That makes a big difference. I don't know of a treader yet that married any earlier than 60. Their life cycles are slower and longer. Tritacello may have another 20 years in him. He may actually see 263, if he's lucky."
"It's just not fair," lamented Bowler, shifting his weight off a cracking limb. "Most Dryadons die off well before 150.
"Try 70 or 80, retorted Dodd unsympathetically. "That's the average life expectancy of humans where I come from, though I admit they live a little longer here."
Bowler paused, searching for a good route to take. "Considering how similar humans are to treaders," he continued, somewhat haltingly, "I would think you would live a lot longer. After all, when their bands are covered, you could easily mistake a treader for a tall human." The limbs and roots of the trees growing out of the cliff-like hillside were increasingly smaller and sparser. Bushes and other forms of vegetation littered the wall of earth more than down below, which only added to the difficulty of scaling it.
"Too bad we're not swappers," joked Bowler, realizing the precarious nature of their circumstance. "I've heard that they don't die. They live for thousands of years helping people, and then retire to some distant sphere in a final form."
Is that what your goat-herding friend told you? Chided Dodd.
Cows, not goats, said Bowler. He held his breath and lunged for a distant branch that was a real stretch. He almost didn't make it. One arm was all that caught the limb, leaving them momentarily dangling.
Warn me next time, complained Dodd hysterically, clinging tightly to Bowler's head. His voice quivered as he tried to swallow his heart. It seemed to be lodged in his throat.
Bowler swung up, sat near the trunk, and helped Dodd off his shoulders.
That was a close one, huh? Gloated Bowler, taking pride in his feat.
He wasn't afraid. He turned his brown eyes on Dodd and asked, Weren't you talking about your swapper with Dungo this morning?
No, said Dodd, breathing heavily. He couldn't believe how near they had come to dying.
I've got big ears, said Bowler. He meant it figuratively and looked at Dodd as though he were a principal, attempting to goad a confession out of the school troublemaker.
Did you overhear it before the cliff experience? Asked Dodd, trying not to look down.
Yep.
Well, then, you can't blame me, stated Dodd confidently. I don't remember anything that happened before the cliffs.
Do you remember zipping down? Asked Bowler. He tried to jog Dodd's memory of the morning's events.
You went first, setting the lines with grips and posts for us to follow.
No, said Dodd, shaking his head.
Do you remember walking to the cliffs with Tritacello and Dungo? We met up by the shallow pond. You were poking at frogs with a stick when I arrived.
Nope.
Certainly you haven't forgotten what I said about your shoes.
Bowler began to laugh.
I thought for sure we had started off on the wrong foot.
No, answered Dodd. I can't recall any of it.
Had Cole been at home, he would have been horribly concerned about forgetting his morning, along with much of his earlier life. However, since he could remember his morning just fine, including his mother's scolding, he wasn't distressed.
Bowler looked more dumbfounded than concerned.
What did you say about my shoes? Asked Dodd.
I can't believe it, said Bowler. You don't remember?
No, assured Dodd, leaning as close to the trunk as he could. The wind was picking back up.
Well, I'm bad at introductions, admitted Bowler matter-of-factly. Anyway, when I saw you, I got nervous and said something dumb.
What? Prodded Dodd. What did you say?
Well, I thought it looked like you had put your shoes on the wrong feet, so I cracked a joke about you getting up too early to put them on straight. I didn't mean any harm by it. I hope you know that now.
Dodd laughed as he glanced down and noticed that the tips of his shoes bend outward.
See, insisted Bowler, it gets better each time I tell it. This morning I was just trying to get you to laugh like that.
And did it work? Asked Dodd.
Bowler raised his eyebrows suspiciously.
No, it didn't, he said.
You looked at me with a blank stare like I was the dumbest thing you'd ever seen, and then followed Tritacello.
Oh, Bowler, began Dodd awkwardly.
I'm sorry about however I acted earlier. He felt crazy suggesting it, but finally confessed, Honestly, Bowler, it wasn't me. I'm not sure who it was, but I know it wasn't me.
It's okay, said Bowler, wearing a martyr's grin. We're friends now, right?
He helped Dodd back onto his shoulders and began climbing vigorously. He had noticed that Dungo was approaching and knew that he would likely try to pass them if he could.
Dodd wished there were a way to make Bowler believe him, but there wasn't.
At the crest, Tritacello was waiting impatiently, scoping the horizon with his noculars. His foot tapped at the ground as though it would speed things up, and he wasted no time in scolding the climbers as they neared him.
Hurry up, Bowler, he said anxiously. They could be coming any minute.
Dodd glanced nervously around the open skies for flutters. He partially wished to be back in the trees, where branches and leaves had him hid.
We're ready, said Bowler bravely. It's Dungo you have to worry about.
From atop Bowler's shoulders, Dodd surveyed the view. He could see for miles. To the northwest, rays of the late afternoon sun made the distant sea look as though it were on fire, with brilliant colors of yellow and red, and it turned the maze-like channels of the bog purple. The face they had just scaled was more than twice the height of the sheer rock cliffs they had climbed earlier, and they had gained another triple that in elevation from galloping up the string of steep hills that filled most of the horizontal gap between them and the sparkling water.
Thanks, Bowler, whispered Dodd in awe. He had known that they were moving quickly, but he hadn't fully realized the immensity of the distance they were covering.
Now, perched at 6,000 feet above sea level, he could gaze out across the trailless wilderness and mentally plot the general course they had come. It was easily over 20 miles as the crow flies. To the east, running northeast, Dodd noticed mountains that soared thousands of feet higher than the bluff they were on. Pine trees and bushes dotted the rocky landscape, with patches of snow cradled in the uppermost valleys. Directly southeast, across a grassy meadow, there was a narrow mountain pass with towering cliffs and ledges on both sides. It was Janus Pass, the only traveled route through the Hook Mountains to Highgate and its neighboring cities. It was the perfect ambush location, just as Tritacello had said. Dodd stared at the tiny crack in the otherwise impassable wall of stone and wondered whether some of Dredarius's men were waiting for them. When Dungo finally emerged, Tritacello was more than ready to run. Fortunately, Dungo's stomach had settled and his regular heartiness had returned to him.
"Thanks for waiting for me,"
he sneered at Bowler and Dodd while pushing them out of his way. He didn't like being in the rear. Tritacello led the team at a fast trot toward Janus Pass. Before they reached the entrance, they merged with a wide road. It ran north and south, obtaining the bluff by winding. No sooner had they stepped foot on the thoroughfare than Dungo halted.
"It's a trap," he grunted, pointing upward.
He tried to show Tritacello the people he could see, insisting over a dozen of Dredarius's men were waiting near the canyon's mouth, about 50 feet up on a shadowed ledge. "I don't see them," said Tritacello, apprehensively, drawing his zip-rope whip and dagger. He stood motionless in the middle of the road, trying to decide what to do.
"It's a trap," insisted Dungo angrily, backing up. "I don't want to be flutter food. Let's hide and wait for nightfall."
Tritacello's ambivalence pursed his lips and furrowed his brow. He wanted to get the job done, but he didn't relish the thoughts of stumbling into an ambush, especially one he'd been plainly shown. "I guess we could wait till it gets dark," confessed Tritacello hesitantly. When Dodd broke in, "Not at night," he said, feeling uneasy. "Let's go now." Dungo glowered at Dodd spitefully. "I'm fine either way," chirped Bowler. He tugged at Dodd's foot to get his attention. "Is this one of your psychic things?" "I'm not psychic," muttered Dodd wearily. He was exhausted and sore, and he wanted the whole world to stop moving. "I just think we should go now. It feels like the right thing to do." "Then I've changed my vote," declared Bowler, turning back toward Tritacello. "Let's skedaddle. If Dungo wants to hide like a coward, he can." Thoughts of the morning's fiasco swayed Bowler's opinion, stiffening his backbone more than usual. "Not even a spare rope," he mumbled under his breath, shaking his head. Tritacello didn't say anything, but he nodded.
"We'll all die," protested Dungo, begrudgingly falling in line.
He was annoyed, and he definitely disagreed with the decision. However, he wasn't going to lose his place to Bowler and Dodd. In the end, the canyon pass proved to be quiet and harmless. Nothing happened as they bolted down the road. And on the other side, the gently sloping highway was dotted with carriages and horses, all heading in the same direction, to Lower Janus. The presence of others changed the atmosphere considerably. Tritacello kept a steady, swift pace, causing Bowler and Dungo to pant as they passed travelers. Nevertheless, his timing was perfect. They arrived near the outskirts of Lower Janus at dusk, right as the sky was turning a deep purple and a few stars were beginning to peek out. Tritacello didn't waste any time in locating a smaller road that parted ways with the bustling thoroughfare. He trotted up and down rolling hills, passing hundreds of crude brick homes that sprinkled the landscape, fitly nestled between fields of grazing cattle. Chickens and dogs frequented the yards, chased by small boys and girls. The farther they went, the more wagons were replaced by pedestrians. Lower Janus had a substantial evening foot crowd, and they responded differently to Dungo and Bowler than the people in carriages had. Young kids pointed their fingers and ran away, and adults stopped to stare. Dungo and Bowler stood out like sore thumbs. The city was filled with a healthy mixture of bobwits, drats, humans, and treaders. Bobwits were short, well-proportioned humans, standing no more than 4 feet. Drats, on the other hand, were 2 feet taller and looked similar to their human cousins, but with unusual noses that stuck upward. They also had little white beards on their chins, even the women and children. Treaders and humans looked the same, except for the bands that circled the necks of the treaders. As Tritacello led the way, Dungo hung his head down, attempting to avoid all eye contact. Bowler did the opposite. He warmly greeted passers-by and gently teased the cowering youths, all while wearing a contagious grin. "I'll catch you next time," he chuckled, calling out to one lady who dashed into her home when she saw them coming. "Where's the fire?" he asked of another woman, who darted off the road like a lamb fleeing wolves. Bowler laughed and enjoyed himself. He hid any signs of hurt over being considered a freak. As the evening passed, darkness replaced twilight, and empty streets replaced the bustling ones. Homes of various shapes and sizes cast light out of their windows and out of open holes that lacked glass panes. Happy voices were heard singing and talking. Bullard began commenting on each smell that he recognized. The hours of toiling to reach their destination had consumed his heaping lunch and his snack from Darius, leaving him hungry. Finally, they came to a bend in the road where a small forest of giant trees grew clumped together. Surrounding the grove were nearly 50 homes and buildings on three sides, with an open cobblestone courtyard on the fourth. "This is it," declared Tritacella with confidence. "It's been a good while, but I still recognize it." Without hesitation, Dungo and Bowler followed Tritacello into the woods until they reached a gigantic stone that was wedged in between three ancient trees. "Ah, yes," said Tritacello, approaching the rock. "Let's see. I think it was four." He picked up a stick and hit the rock squarely four times. Nothing happened. Dodd shifted around on Bowler's shoulders and then slid down. He staggered and would have fallen if it weren't for Bowler steadying him with a quick arm. "I was getting worried," said someone from within the tree. A slit of light poured out from around the edges of a hidden entrance that had been tightly sealed before. "I've been expecting you," said the voice. "You're late." The unusual door swung outward, and an old man, about 5 feet 6 inches, stood with the aid of a cane in the entryway. His hair was bright white, and he had a pleasant, grandfatherly smile. "Come in, come in. I've got plenty of goose liver," the man said. "Bamboo," responded Tritacello cordially. He bent down and hugged the man with one arm. "Sorry we're behind schedule. You know Dungo and Bowler." "Yes, I remember both of them," said Bamboo, squinting to look past them at Dodd, who was shadowed by Bowler. "And is this the lad you've been writing so much about?" He poked his cane at Dodd and stepped aside to let them enter. "Yes, his name's Dodd," announced Tritacello. Inside the treehouse, the ceilings were remarkably high, with dozens of unusual-looking smokeless candles, tied together in tight clusters called stacks. They lit the entry like magnificent chandeliers. To the left, a spacious kitchen was hidden in the rock they had observed from outside. An overpowering smell of freshly prepared food drew the eager eyes of Dungo and Bowler to the table, where platters were heaped with goose liver and greens. "Do you mind if we eat first and talk later?" asked Bowler. His stomach growled so loudly that Dungo glanced at him and shook his head in disapproval. "No, by all means," said Bamboo. "Come in and take a seat." Bowler didn't need a second invitation. He shot toward the table with more energy than he'd had in hours. Without Bowler to steady him, Dodd swayed. He reached for a fancy waist-high cabinet, hoping to catch himself, but instead knocked over an old pot of dried flowers on his way to the floor. And when he struggled to get up, the world darkened around him, and he passed out.